The Womanity Project. Let's talk about gender. Genders. Gender? Gender equality.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Womanity Project. I'm Aurélie Harp, and you're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. I'm proud. Céline Rosenthal, my dear co-host, has been awarded the Solo Rep Directing Fellowship. Yay! And she's living to Miami for the next 7 months. Oh, now I'm sad. So, to rescue me, the wonderful Géraldine Pearson is joining me today. Hello, Géraldine.
Good morning.
Good morning. So, we've mourned over the election's result, but it is time we continue the fight for gender equality.
So, women in sports, after postponing this episode, we're finally continuing our conversation with Alex Tanis to talk about women and gender equality in sports. And let me tell you, when we say gender equality in sports, well, there is still a long road to go. Let's start again with Alex.
Yeah.
So now you're in grad school mm-hmm. for what again?
Sports management.
Okay, so what does that mean?
It's a kind of a big hood under a lot of different parts. So it goes, it can kind of be divided into like coaching aspects. So you can be either coaching staff mm-hmm. and hands-on, or it can be more executive and financial. So people who would work at the executive table for, say, like Brooklyn Nets or sales or marketing management, or you could be a coach, defensive coach, offensive lineman coach, whatever there is in whatever sport. Mm-hmm. Personally, I'm in the administrative executive path. Yeah.
All right. Cool. So are you going to be like Jerry Maguire? Do you get the question?
No. Boy, that's the first time I've heard that. But I'm kind of hoping to work the ranks up in terms of changing the face of the executive. So I don't know if you know this, but only around like 4% of women are in executive positions in professional sports leagues. I think in NCAA there are 437 Division I schools, I believe, and 8% of them have a woman at the head table, somewhere at the head table.
Why do you think that is?
It's not been around too long for women to be allowed to. I mean, Title IX's been around since the 70s?
What's Title IX?
Title IX was a law that was put into place to allow equal opportunity, no sex discrimination for pretty much anything. And they didn't expect it to transfer into sports. And since it's transcended, women have kind of escalated in the sports world. But there's still a huge stigma of women in sports. And, you know, even if you look at my graduate classes, there's maybe 2 girls in an entire class of, say, 20, 22 people.
Yeah. What is that stigma? When you say the word, like, there's a stigma of women in sports, what's the stigma?
Maybe they're not competent. Maybe it's, like, more a locker room. It's a huge locker room mentality, you know, in class places that I've worked. It's like a boys' club, mm-hmm. and if you want to work in sports, if you want to be in sports, you kind of either have to be boyish. Uh-huh. You know, if you wear a skirt or a dress, it's kind of, you know, and maybe you might not be taken as seriously as one of the girls who wears, like, khakis and a polo.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's just, it's just strange. Like, you know, if a woman works on Wall Street in a skirt and dress and does really well, why can't she work at ESPN headquarters in a skirt and a dress, you know, doing just as well? But it's evolving. I would definitely say it's evolving. It's growing, but I don't think that, you know, the young generation sees that as an opportunity yet. Like, if you ask me a little girl, what does she want to be when she grows up, I don't think she'll ever say, I want to work for ESPN or I want to work for La Liga, you know?
I don't even know what those things are.
Yeah. ESPN is Sports Progress in general.
And, great.
And La Liga is professional soccer.
Oh, that's awesome. Okay, cool.
Title IX is a law passed in 1972 that requires gender equity for boys and girls in every educational program that receives federal funding. Many people have never heard of Title IX or think it applies only to sports, but athletics is only one of 10 key areas addressed by the law. These areas are access to higher education, career education, education for pregnant and parenting students, employment, learning environment, math and science, sexual harassment, standardized testing, and technology. In 2014 and 2016, non-legal binding guidelines were issued by the U.S. governments of education stating that transgender students are protected from sex-based discrimination under Title IX.
Views differ on the impact of Title IX, whether or not Title IX has resulted in increased athletic opportunities for females, or whether and to what extent Title IX has resulted in decreased athletic opportunities for males. However, the results are very encouraging. 44 years after the passage of Title IX, women and girls in the United States are playing and following sports in unprecedented numbers. 40% of all sports participants are female, according to the University of Minnesota's Tucker Center for Research on Girl and Women in Sport, and roughly a third of fans of major sports are women.
But if the evolution of women's sports over the last four decades has been dramatic, the media coverage? Not as much. According to the Tucker Center, women's athletic received only about 4% of all sports media coverage. Other studies have put television time as low as 1%.
Dr. Cheryl Cookie, an associate professor of American Studies at Purdue University, and two colleagues conducted the 2015 update to a 25-year study on women's sports coverage. It appears that today's sexism is quite subtle, but still very real, not to mention that often women's sports don't get covered at all.
When you look at who produces sport coverage, the Women's Media Center's 2015 report on the status of women in the U.S. media showed that about 90% of sport editors are men, and 90% are white.
And for the female reporters out there, blatant sexism and harassment in online comments is pretty scary. Listen to a selection of comments made to sports reporters Sarah Spain and Julie DiCaro. In this extract, for the anti-harassment campaign, hashtag more than mean, men are asked to read out loud.
I'd like to start a petition for a ban on all links to Julie DiCaro's Twitter feed.
Okay.
Hi.
You ready to do some mean tweets?
I'm ready.
Sarah Spain sounds like a nagging wife on TV today.
Not even married yet.
Julie DiCaro is a run-of-the-mill, mediocre beat writer.
Not atrocious, not good.
Just sort of there.
I'm actually not a beat writer at all, but okay.
Sarah Spain is just a scrub muffin.
I don't even know what a scrub muffin is.
I don't either.
I love muffins.
One of the players should beat you to death with their hockey stick like the whore you are.
I'm just reading this.
Okay.
I mean, okay, this is why we don't hire any females unless we need our sucked or our food cooked.
Sarah Spain is a self-important know-it-all.
Just read the tweets, man. There's some mean tweets.
F*** this dumb.
There's a lot of C word.
There's a lot of C words. In
yeah.
Here.
Yeah. I hope your dog gets hit by a car, you.
Hopefully, this skank Julie DiCaro is Bill Cosby's next victim. That would be classic.
I don't know what to say to that.
I don't. I don't think I can even say that.
I hope your boyfriend beats you. I'm sorry.
Why bring up your own rape in this story? Is it your way of firing back at critics who said you can't get any?
That's something, huh?
I'm sorry.
Okay. So I have to read all of them, right? Because, I mean...
Read them, I guess.
I hope you get raped again.
Oh.
I'm having trouble looking at you when I'm saying these things. Sarah Spain is a b- I would hate. B- okay.
You need to be hit in the head with a hockey puck and killed. That's it.
Sorry that these were directed toward you.
I'm sorry on behalf of other people everywhere that you've had to deal with this.
I feel like I need to apologize to my mother, but to be that's a whole nother story.
Yep. Pretty disgusting.
And if you think this is ancient history, remember what happened at the Olympics in Rio last August when Mexican gymnast Alexa Moreno started getting body shamed by Twitter users. They called her the pig.
Ah, as Celine said in an episode a few weeks ago, what the ever-loving fuck is wrong with people? Okay, I'm calming down. And let's hear what Alex has to say.
Have you been following the news of the Olympics?
Yes. Yes.
All right, right there, I'm going to say you must have thoughts. What are your thoughts?
Yes. Wow, there's a lot going on. Well, interestingly enough, before the Olympics started going on, part of my graduate assistantship is like doing research. Mm-hmm. And one of the things was the subcontext of reporters on women's sports.
Yeah.
And if you notice, a lot of times in women's sports, there's a lot of sexualization. There is a lot of interest in the personal aspects of the woman rather than the athletic abilities. But amazingly enough, Simone Biles, the gymnast, did such a great job. Mm-hmm. A lot of the times, though, you hear the reporters, female or not, female or male, both saying she has a lot of style, pizzazz, she looks cute on the floor. Watching men's gymnasts, it's more like, wow, what a strong tumble. You know, it's so strange. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure Simone went 5 feet higher, but okay, we're not gonna, sure, whatever, that was cute. All right, we'll take cute. So that was pretty apparent, I think, in the gymnast aspect. And maybe other things such as in volleyball. You know, I think a topic that came up was the women's volleyball outfits. You know, men in tank tops and shorts, women in bikinis. And although they look amazing in those bikinis, do they really want to wear them? Has anyone ever asked them? Mm-hmm. And those are issues that I don't think ever were talked about or addressed during the Olympics. But
that's nuts.
Imagine if the same absurd comments were told to men. Imagine if the same absurd comments were told to men. Things need to change.
And even more than that, it's now official. USA women have more Olympic medals than men. 2016 has been a groundbreaking year for American Olympian females in general. Out of the 121 medals, US women took 61, and the men had 55, and 5 were in mixed events. The US team arrived in Rio with the largest women's contingent in Olympic history, 292 women to 263 men, compared to only 90 women out of the 428 athletes in 1972. And advertisers begin to pick up the change. Listen to this clip about this Nike commercial.
When I was growing up, girls just didn't run in public.
No one on my all-boys team would pass to me.
Dad told me I couldn't be a boxer. He said I was too small.
There was a guy who tried to spit on me and then push me out of his way.
There comes a point where you have to be sure of yourself.
People aren't used to women being so passionate. It scares them.
One day, I just said it doesn't matter what other people think.
I'm a fashion model who can dunk.
I'm a girl. That doesn't mean I have to wear a skirt.
Doesn't mean I can't get all fired up. They used to say that girl is crazy.
But then I just kept winning.
I didn't set out to dominate. I just did.
Somebody's got to be the best. So why not me?
I'm 55 years old and I run close to 70 miles a week.
I never felt like quitting.
There's something telling me to do it every single day. Just want to play ball.
I am Cappy Pondexter.
Diane Taurasi.
Sherry Nelson.
I'm Peekaboo Street.
And I got something to say.
Female athletes have to overcome the bias that their game isn't as good as the men's game.
Are boys bigger, stronger, faster? Yes. Is that all that has to do with being an athlete? No.
The halfpipe doesn't care that I'm a girl.
I want to pitch for the Boston Red Sox.
And when I look in the mirror, I see an athlete.
I am a runner.
A snowboarder.
Ball player.
Triathlete.
Softball player.
I am an athlete.
And I'm proud of that athlete.
It's not a girl thing. It's not a boy thing. It's a skills thing.
You're listening to The Womanity Project on Radio Free Brooklyn.
We're talking about female champions. Let's talk about one in particular, Hibti Hajj Mohammed.
I know that there was a fencer who was competing this year who was competing in hijab.
Yep, it'd be Mohammed. She's actually a fencer, fellow fencer in Fencers Club, Peter Westbrook Foundation, which is the West 28th Street location.
Oh, yeah. Yep. So you know her.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, she's a great girl. You know, she worked very hard to get to where she's been. And just like any of the other girls, Daga and Marielle, who were both in the Olympics as well, it's a long journey. You know, you become, by the late 20s, you know, you've dedicated so much of your time and life to get to where you are in the sport. And personally, I've never looked at her any differently. And neither have any of us, in, I think, in U.S. Fencing Foundation. But the statement she made was, it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool.
Wait, yeah. What was the statement that she made?
Wearing her hijab in the Olympics and competing as an American fencer.
Yeah.
That's a statement in of itself, showing, one, USA's diversity, and two, the abilities of an athlete, regardless of religion, gender, sexual orientation, to be successful.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Actually, that leads me to another question, because you have fenced all over the world. Is it really common for, I mean, obviously, in other countries, women must fence in hijab.
I have maybe only seen 10 women wear hijabs in my life, in fencing. Maybe 10. Not even that, I would say. It'd be for sure. And then a few in the Arab countries, like Algeria, I think, has one. Egypt has one or two. Mm-hmm. Qatar has a couple. But 10, if not, no more. Yeah.
Wow. Because to me, this is how ignorant I am. I'm like, but you're wearing a helmet on top of it anyway, so why does anybody care? You can't see it.
You can't see it. No. No. You don't. You don't see anything because you're fully covered no matter what, which is the beauty of the sport.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe if she was wearing a hijab while playing soccer or while playing volleyball, it's a big difference. But in fencing, it's kind of favorite. You know, helps you out. Yeah.
And for a reminder, Hibti Hajj Mohammed competed in hijab and won the bronze medal in sab fencing at the Olympic of Rio this year. And here is what this great champion has to say.
I want children out there to believe that they can be members of the Olympic team despite their skin color, despite their religion, despite their gender. It's been a tremendous journey. Never in a million years did I imagine I would be one of the lucky few to go home with an Olympic medal. I want people to be comfortable in spaces where they may not feel included. We want to shatter those stereotypes that people have that, you know, girls shouldn't be participating in sports or African Americans shouldn't swim. If I can, with my story, inspire the youth out there to be involved in sports where they may be one of very few athletes who look like them, then I feel like I've done my job.
I want every children to believe. Remember me of another champion. I wonder what that can be. Oh yeah, Hillary.
So we talked about women at the Olympics. Let's hear now what Alex has to say about how women are treated in sports, and if it varies with countries.
So that's really interesting. So being a woman woman in sports.
Mm-hmm.
Do you find that there are assumptions that people make about you?
Personally, maybe because I work with people that have known me for a while, I don't think there are.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe in places that I've traveled, such as like Dubai or in Hungary, people
mm-hmm.
might not see a woman in sports as knowledgeable about it. But when you start to speak to someone and you can actually demonstrate that you know what you're talking about,
mm-hmm.
They're very impressed. And, you know, it kind of opens more opportunities. People start asking, you know, if you want to come help coach or do an event. And that's really awesome.
So you've been in fencing in Dubai and Hungary?
Yeah, a couple of the places. Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
What have you noticed is the difference between, is there a difference actually, is
mm-hmm.
a question, between women's sports in those countries and here?
I think for sure, like, so for instance, in, like, the Arab countries, whenever I travel there for a sporting event, I believe that they expected the women to be weaker, and I think that they even made themselves feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
So there were a lot of times where I'd be fencing another girl, and she would stop in the middle of a bout and start, like making fainting motions or, like, feeling as if she's, like, overwhelmed or, like, freaking out, and the men of her coaching staff would run over and freak out, and you'd never see that in America in this fencing tournament. I've maybe once seen a girl become faint or pass out or get nervous or freak out or want to throw up, but almost never. All the girls are always just having a bunch of fun, and, you know, you win, you lose, you freak out, you have emotions, you cry. It's no big deal, but there, it's as if it was a big deal that she was breaking down.
Wow.
And it was kind of like across the board, everyone was doing it. China, the women there were expected to be very strong.
Mm-hmm.
Their coaches looked at them as powerhouses. You know, you'd see a lot of the coaches, like, slap the girls on the back or,
wow.
you know, shake them, be like, come on, you got to do this. You're like, why are you crying? You know, like, pushing them on. And but that's Chinese culture. Chinese culture is they breed people from a very young age to be such great athletes or such great doctors or such great engineers or whatever it may be. So a lot of it has to do with the culture.
Mm. I mean, I didn't even ask you about this. So you're Lebanese American.
Yes.
Awesome.
Yes.
And obviously you were born here.
I was born here, lived my early years up till 6 there, and then moved back here full-time.
Where in Lebanon
were you? Fahd Hazir, which is north, kind of near Kura on the eastern side of Lebanon, towards the Mediterranean.
Awesome. And both of your parents are Lebanese?
No, only my dad is.
Oh!
But she, my mom, yeah, but my mom learned Arabic when she moved to Lebanon. And
oh, very
she,
cool.
She's very fluent in it.
Where's your mom from?
She is from upstate New York.
Oh, okay.
Like Buffalo, way up there.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you kind of grew up bilingual then?
Yeah.
That's very
yep.
cool. And so you mentioned your family is Christian Orthodox?
My mom's Catholic descent.
Okay.
My dad is Greek Orthodox / Maronite Catholic. It's complicated. So they kind of just, when I was little, they were like, you can choose. I was like, okay.
What's the difference between, because to me, I'm like, oh, it's all Catholic. It's
yeah.
all Jesus.
Yeah.
Is there a difference?
There's a few, like, differences in patron saints. Like, Greek Orthodox is super strict. Like, you actually don't get baptized. You have, like, you have to attend church a bunch more than Catholics do. And
oh,
then,
really?
Yeah, it's a super strict, like, following. Catholics a little bit more relaxed, a little bit more communal. I kind of
heard Catholics as being described as more relaxed.
Yeah.
That's really
I mean, compared to the Orthodox, yeah. So I'm kind of like a relaxed Catholic on top of that. Like, I'm a Catholic, like, you know, every once in a while.
So as a, I guess, fencer, can you fence for Lebanon?
I actually did.
I thought that maybe you did.
Yeah.
So
I transferred. I transferred to the Lebanese national team, oh, God, I don't know how many years back.
Do you still fence?
A couple years back. No, I'm retired.
You're retired? How old are you?
24.
You're 24 and you're retired? That's amazing.
This is where athlete lives in. No, I really concentrated on school. That's why I was, you know, you have to kind of pick one.
Mm-hmm.
But now I kind of coach when it's convenient.
That's cool.
So I've gone to the competition recently, helping the Lebanese national team coaching in Sabre. So I'm still around it.
So in order to be on the Lebanese, like, national team,
mm-hmm.
you didn't move to Lebanon.
No.
How does that work? Because I have a feeling, like, if you're outside of the world,
mm-hmm.
it, like, makes no sense to you that you can be, like, American and fence for another country.
There's actually a bunch of past American fencers that now compete for either their parents' home country or their home country, whatever it may be. Uh-huh. So my sister and I and another girl at Ohio State all represent the Lebanese national team, oh. but we go to college and live in the U.S. Okay. So as long as you have Lebanese citizenship, you can apply and compete for them.
Oh.
Wilford competes for the Philippines.
Yes.
And then there's a couple other people who transferred to, I think, Panama. A couple of the girls who compete. I know one of the boys from Penn State competes for Japan. He's okay. from Japanese descent. So it's really totally up to you. I mean, if you have the citizenship and you want to compete for them, sure, you can. But then you have to go to their designated competitions a couple times a year, whatever it may be.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. So yeah. you have dual citizenship then?
Mm-hmm.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Was that just something you kind of always had, or did you have to at a certain point say, I want to pursue having dual citizenship, I need to do, like, a shit ton of work?
No, I've had it since I was born. Yeah, it kind of just came with the package.
So there's one more question.
Mm-hmm.
If you could nominate somebody, another woman to be interviewed by the Woman Editing Project to share their story, who would you nominate?
Ooh. I'd say Doug Morrow, Wozniak.
Who is that?
She's one of my teammates, both from St. John's and from MFC.
Awesome.
She's actually just in the Olympics. Just
oh.
Special expensing.
Awesome.
Yeah, she lives in Manhattan. Oh, well, in Hoboken, but in person Manhattan, so. She's local.
She's local, that's great.
She's local. She's cool.
All right.
Yeah.
Well.
You have been listening to The Womanity Project on Radio Free Brooklyn.
So this week, our question to you is sex making women's sport or sport in general more popular or damaging it?
You can like us and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at Womanity Project. You can support us and sponsor us on our page, radiofreebrooklyn.com/show/the-womanity-project.
Special thanks to Céline Rosenthal, Alexandra Tanus, Lizzie Hackstedt, and of course, Radio Free Brooklyn.
Tune in next week, The Womanity Project on Radio Free Brooklyn, every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time. And dear listeners, we are airing one of your requested power songs to close out our show. This song was submitted by Menja Teshla, and this is Holding Out for a Hero by Bonnie Tyler. Au revoir, tout le monde!
À la semaine prochaine!